Hello, this is John Ivey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Boys Life magazine. Our first article for this evening is taken from page 16, entitled Hiking Half Dome. And on page 17, it has a picture of a young boy like he's hiking up a long trail using cables. 8 hours on the trail and more than 4,000 feet in elevation gain have led the scouts of Troop 1 to their biggest test. The final ascent of Yosemite's most famous landmark. Christopher Helke is nervous. He and the rest of Troop 1 from Santa Barbara, California, has come a long way to get to this point. The group drove 8 hours from home to camp near Yosemite National Park in Central California. Once there, they spent 2 days getting acclimated to the altitude, which is more than 4,000 feet higher than what they're used to back home. Then they hiked nearly 8 hours to get to the base half of Half Dome, one of the most recognizable landmarks on the West Coast, and gained another 4,000 feet in the process. And now, with just 400 more feet to go, they've almost reached their goal, the summit of Half Dome. This is the hardest part. The final ascent up the granite dome's east face follows a row of cables. The slope is so steep, hikers must pull themselves up step by step. Just standing there looking at the incline can be intimidating. "I wasn't sure I was going to make it up," says Christopher, a 16-year-old life scout. "I was a little nervous about the height, but I thought, there's no way I'm not going to go up. If I leave now, I may never come back. I have to do this." So, up he goes. Preparation. The hills near Santa Barbara on the Pacific coast, not too far from Los Angeles, aren't exactly the mountains of Yosemite, but they'll have to do. After all, you can't just waltz into this national park and expect to make it to the top of Half Dome. You have to be prepared. It's still several months before the trip, but Troop 1 is already getting ready. First comes a series of hikes to help the guys get used to what will be the most challenging thing they've ever done. "We did some hikes in the local backcountry to the top of Big Hills to practice," says Jake Bartlane, also a 16-year-old life scout. "It definitely helped." Next came the push-ups, lots of them. The scouts implement a rigorous workout routine to prepare themselves for the difficult task of using the cables near the summit of Half Dome. Many of the guys play sports anyway, so working out is nothing new. Jake, for example, likes to stay in shape so he can rock climb at local gyms. "I try to climb a 30-foot rope every day on my own," he says. "It's hanging from a tree in my backyard. I can do it now without my feet." Through the mist. The troop's campsite just outside the Yosemite gates includes a basketball court, a creek, and some gorgeous scenery, perfect for more practice hikes. It is now just one day before the Half Dome climb, and there's a strong sense of nervous anticipation, but the guys aren't done getting ready. "It really helped us to get acclimated," Jake says. "After a while, we noticed we didn't breathe as hard as we walked everywhere." Once Dome Day arrives, the boys are up early. They hit the trail around sunrise, knowing they have about a 14-hour trip ahead of them. The 7-mile trail to Half Dome is uphill most of the way, and the anticipation is building. Even though there are multiple views of the pristine Yosemite wilderness all around them, the going isn't easy. It's a hard hike," says Benjamin Helke, a 14-year-old life scout. "I had never done anything on that scale." Over the next half day, the boys will drink a ton of water and walk past a handful of waterfalls, including one so close they can feel the mist. They'll get a great view of Liberty Cap, another of the area's granite domes. And they'll even catch a glimpse of their ultimate destination, Half Dome, standing in the distance, waiting. Final ascent. The climb up the face of Half Dome might be only 400 feet, but right now it seems like 400 miles. The guys drop their day packs to the ground, take a short break to collect themselves. Then One by one, they grab the cables and begin to pull themselves up. Imagine walking up a staircase so steep that if you dared to stand straight up, you would fall over backward. You can bet those cables come in handy. It's really scary, Christopher says. I was just holding on to the cable, looking straight up, trying just to concentrate on getting to the top. I was trying not to look down. I was just hanging on the cable as tight as I could, looking at the person in front of me and just trying to keep going. Christopher says he was so focused on taking each step that he lost track of time, but the final ascent actually takes around 30 minutes. The reward for reaching the summit? A tremendous sense of accomplishment and a spectacular view of the wilderness through which they had just hiked. It was amazing, Christopher says. You could see so far. You could see the entire park. It was a great view. After all they've been through, the hike down is easy. The scouts lower themselves back down the cables, take a quick lunch break, then head back to their camp. They pass the same waterfalls and the same lookout points, only now their sense of nervous anticipation is replaced with the sense of accomplishment. It was a long hike, but it was worth it at the end, Christopher says. It was definitely worth it. And it has pictures of them going up to the summit using the cables. Here's a picture showing Jonathan Ford and the rest of the group carefully, very carefully, looked down before the ascent. No helmets. The National Park Service does not require hikers to wear helmets as they ascend the steep face of Half Dome. There's a very slim chance of rock fall from above due to the structure of the dome itself. In March, however, of 2009, just 2 months before Troop 1's visit, there was a huge rock fall not far from Half Dome. Hundreds of trees and a portion of a popular trail were buried as rocks tumbled 1,800 feet down into a canyon. No one was injured. Perfect inaccessibility. Around 1865, a Yosemite report declared that Half Dome would never be climbed, calling it perfectly inaccessible. And the only one of the prominent points about Yosemite which never has been and never will be trodden by human foot. Only a decade later, a climber named George Anderson reached the summit, and the cables followed by Troop 1 mark pretty much the same route. Now about 50,000 hikers make it to the top of Half Dome each year, but it isn't easy. Park rangers must help hundreds of people on the trail each summer who have gotten in over their heads. Well, now let's find out about the gear guy, sleep gear. Sleep right, sleep tight. This is from page 22. Guy gear is here to help you get a good night's rest on the trail. You're trying to sleep, but there's a baseball-sized rock poking you in the back. You keep sliding downhill in your sleeping bag. Just as you drift off to sleep, you're jolted awake by the sound of your scoutmaster snoring like a gorilla with a head cold. While we can't help you with your snoring scoutmaster, Gear Guy is here to save you with some handy sleep tips and gear that will help you get a better night's rest on the trail. Sleep tight tips. Eat. Don't go to bed hungry if you can help it. Your body generates more heat when it has calories to burn, so you stay warmer and sleep better. Get level. Pick a spot that's as flat and as level as possible so you're not sliding downhill all night. Flat ground can be tough to find. So if sleeping on a slight incline is unavoidable, always have your head on the uphill part so all the blood doesn't rush to your noggin. Clear the way. Before you go to bed, do a quick sweep of the spot you'll be sleeping on to remove sticks, stones, and other things. But leave the pine needles and leaves right where they are. They'll give you a little extra padding, and leaving them will make less of an impact on the environment. Look above. Check for dead trees, limbs, pine cones, and other stuff that could fall on you in the night. Avoid those spots. Do a stakeout. Take the extra time to stake out the body of your tent and the guy lines on your rainfly. That way, if the wind whips up, you won't be kept awake by the annoying flapping of the fly. Also, this will improve airflow and ventilation within your tent. It will help you avoid your tent wetting through with morning dew and condensation. Keep it rolled up. If you're going to sleep out under the stars, good for you. It's one of Gear Guy's favorite things to do. Keep your sleeping bag rolled up in its stuff sack until it's time to hit the hay. That way you'll prevent your bag from getting wet from dew or humidity. And it'll give you the creepy crawl. It'll give the creepy crawlies less opportunities to get inside before you do. Bring PJs. Now, I'm not saying you ought to pack those Spider-Man pajamas, unless that's how you roll. Just make sure you always have clean clothes to wear to bed. Maybe it's simply a t-shirt and boxers, but having something that doesn't smell like campfire, dinner, or your own BO will help you sleep better. Bonus, it'll keep your sleeping bag cleaner, too. Throw it at your feet. Cold weather tip. Whatever clothes you're planning to wear in the morning, toss those in the bottom of your sleeping bag. They'll keep your feet warmer, and the clothes will be cozy and warm when you get dressed in the morning. Sure, they'll be wrinkled, but get over it. You're camping. Sleep in your clothes. If it's particularly cold, wear layers to bed, long underwear, tops and bottoms. Warm, clean socks and a fleece jacket are a good start for frigid nights. DIY. Don't bring that huge, bulky pillow from your bed at home. Instead, make it a do-yourself pillow. Use a stuff sack or a fleece jacket and fill it with your other clothing layers to make a soft mini pillow. Wear a hat. We lose most of our body heat through our heads, so keep a stocking cap or balaclava close at hand. Then if you get chilly in the night, you can just slip it on and warm up. Sleep light. Keep a headlamp or flashlight at your side when you sleep. Doing this is key to being able to find your way in the middle of the night, whether it's an emergency or you're just heading out to relieve yourself. Bonus, if it's cold, keeping your headlamp inside your sleeping bag prevents the batteries from getting cold and losing their power. Sleeping pad. A sleeping pad is one of the most important pieces of camping gear you'll ever own. In addition to keeping you comfortable while sleeping someplace hard, the pad will also insulate your body from the warmth-grabbing ground. A sleeping pad is something you'll never grow out of, and as long as you can take care of it, it'll last for many years. So it might be worth investing in a good one. There are several types. Closed-cell foam pads are usually thin, lightweight, and durable foam pads that give you adequate insulation but won't provide lots of comfort and padding. Open-cell foam pads are lightweight and softer than closed-cell pads but won't be quite as warm or durable. Self-inflating pads are thin pads that usually have a nylon shell covering open-cell foam. They provide good insulation and warmth but are more expensive, heavier, and can pop. Bag liner sleep sheet. One of the handiest and most underrated pieces of sleep gear, the sleeping bag liner, is truly multi-purpose. In warm weather, it can be used alone as an ultra-light sleeping bag. When slipped inside a sleeping bag, it'll boost the warmth of your bag by 10 or 30 degrees and will keep it cleaner and reduce wear and tear. Liners are made of everything from cotton to silk to fleece. The closed-cell foam Ridge Rest sleeping bag is an ultralight backpacking classic. It weighs just 9 ounces and has helped many a scout sleep over the years. The Sea to Summit Adapter Coolmax travel liner is made with moisture-wicking Coolmax fabric like lots of athletic clothes and is well-suited for summer camping. This liner will also soon be offered in a version treated with insect shield to repel mosquitoes and other bugs. The 2-pound Thermarest Trail Light. Self-inflating bag rolls up and packs small enough for backpacking trips. The 2-pound open-cell foam self-inflating Kelty camper pad has anti-slip dots on one side and comes with a repair kit. Another good liner for warm weather camping, the Remitz Mummy Bag Liner, is made of the same fabric used on Rees Mountain's underlayer clothing and is specifically designed for use with mummy-style sleeping bags. Pillow. This is a camp luxury. Sure, you can make your own, but if you have the space, Sleeping with an impeccable, lightweight pillow is pretty darn nice. The N Pro pillow weighs 11 ounces and has a polar fleece side for cold weather camping and a microfiber side for warmer nights. Throw it in its stuff sack and it'll compress down to 25% of its full size. Want to pack your own pillow? Bring along this 2 to 3 ounce microfiber covered Therm-a-Rest Trekker pillowcase and fill it with all your extra clothes for an even comfier do-it-yourself pillow. Guy Gear has been using this Slumberjack Quail-a-Fill camp pillow for a really long time. It's not the cushiest thing in the world, but it does the job and is affordable. Cot. While you'd probably never bring a cot along for a backpacking trip, there's nothing better than racking out on a cot on a car camping trips. They get you off the road, off the ground for added comfort, better ventilation, and for some, a better night's rest. This foldable Trekker camp cot weighs 15 pounds and supports you comfortably with durable nylon fabric stretched across an aluminum frame. And finally, the sturdy and wide Slumberjack Big Cot has polyester fabric with an aluminum steel frame. And here on the page it shows the pictures of the pillows and the cots and all the things you need to get a good night's rest while you're camping. Well, how about going to Dear Pedro? Haven't heard from him in a while. Our first one, writer asked, Dear Pedro, I really enjoy the Cooking Info, the magazine, and would like to be a chef in the future. Do you like to cook? And that's from Jacob Carr in Houston, Texas. And Pedro responds, Eating is my thing, Jacob. Cooking, not so much. Dear Pedro, I am a big fan of your magazine. I think that you are the most intelligent burro I know. How can I make more money at home? How much money do you make? P.S. How's the boss treating you, and how's your office? I hear it's messy. From Connor Hoagland in Mount Holly, New Jersey. Pedro responds, I'll bet you say that to all the burros, Connor. To earn a little green, see if any of your neighbors need chores done. It makes me tired just suggesting it. I get paid in calories and not cash. And who told you about my office? I know where everything is. At least, that's what I tell the boss. Next. Dear Pedro, there are girls like me who like to sweat, fish, jump off cliffs, forgo the shower, and get messy. Do you have any advice? Michaela, Tiger, Harp, Phoenix, Arizona. Pedro responds, Yeah, Tiger. Join the venturing crew when you turn 14 or 13 and have completed the 8th grade and go easy around the cliffs. Find details at boyslife.org. Dear Pedro, how many jokes are sent to Think and Grin? Do you get a lot of the same ones? That's from Elijah in E. Loomis in Magnolia, Texas. Pedro answers, We get hundreds of jokes, Elijah. Some of them are repeats, but I hee-hee-haw at all of them, at least all of the funny ones. Dear Pedro, firefighters strut their stuff in the November 09 issue, took up only one page, but made an impact on me. I went to the website to watch the Firefighter Combat Challenge in Las Vegas, Nevada, and learned about problems that confront firefighters every day. Thanks. And that from Matthew Lawrence in Macomb, Michigan. Pedro responds, We aim to please Matthew by bringing you stuff you need to know or didn't even know you needed to know. Dear Pedro, I read The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, and now my dad and I might build rafts so that I can go pirating on the Arkansas River. Could you get away from the boss so you could be on the team? And from John Biederman in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Pedro says, The boss says he would love to send me down the river, John, but I don't like the way he's smiling. So unnatural. I think I'll stay here where it's high and dry. Dear funny old Pedro, how do you pick whose questions you answer? It's not fair when everyone sends in something. That's from J.D. Black in Canal Winchester, Ohio. I don't have the space or the time to answer every letter that comes in, J.D. Remember, I have to haul the mail back too. So I pick the ones that interest me. The boss says it's the only time I get to use my brain, and that's a good thing. I wonder what he means by that. DiPedro, I really like boys' live headliners. It is amazing how much kids just like me have achieved. I have some questions for you. How many days does it take to complete your mail route? Does the boss let you use a car or motorcycle? Does the boss ever offend you or hurt your feelings? That's from Rohith K. in Los Altos, California. I haul the bag every day, Rohith. The mail never stops coming in. I asked the boss about a motorcycle. Yikes! If I thought his smile earlier was weird, you should have heard his laugh just now. He doesn't offend me, but he's creeping me out. I'm getting back to work. See you next month. So ends Letters to Pedro. Now, can you continue with Heads Up from page 4? Scouting hits the track. The Boy Scouts of America number 19 car races for the Dale Coyne Racing Team this month at Indianapolis 500, one of the biggest car races in the world. And Ride of a Lifetime. Eagle Scout Eric Fiala spent 19 months and 13 days biking from one of the northernmost points in North America, Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, to the southernmost tip of South America, Ushuaia, Argentina. Along the way, he was hit by a car, mugged, and thrown down from his bike into a tree. Eric pressed on, though all in the name of adventure and autism awareness. He reached the end of his ride on February 2, 2009, looking out over the ocean with Antarctica only 600 miles away on the other side. VL recently caught up with Eric. This is Boy's Life. Boy's Life asked him, was it difficult to ride so far day after day? Eric answers, the greatest distance I'd ever ridden during training was 40 miles. But this trip I had to ride at least 60 miles a day. I did 58 the first day, and I woke up the next morning feeling dead. But you have to say, okay, I just have to do this. Boy's Life next question, what was the most memorable moment of the trip? Eric answers, crossing from Chile into Argentina over the crest of a hill, I got a view of Mount Fitzroy, which is just one of the most incredible scenes. It's actually the inspiration for the Patagonia logo. You see it and think, that can't possibly be real. Boy's Life asks, did the trip ever look like it might be in jeopardy? Eric, my rear rim cracked in Chile. My wheel size was common in the United States, but not in Latin America. I contemplated taking a bus to miss some rough stretches, but I decided I couldn't finish the trip that way. I backtracked to a big city, which was a 4 or 5 day detour. Luckily, they had a rim that fit, and I was able to finish. Boy's Life. Did any lessons learned in scouting help you? Eric. Self-sufficiency is an incredibly important thing. Being able to improve local foods and cook them over a burner, knowing where to set up a camp, being able to find what I needed, those were all basic skills I acquired through scouting. Boy's Life. You wrote in support of autism awareness. What was that like? Eric. People along the way would ask me why I was doing this, and I would tell them. I was able to connect with people whose lives had been touched by autism, and that's an incredibly rewarding thing. And last question from Boy's Life. What would you tell a young person thinking about taking on a challenge like this? Eric answers. Huge accomplishments aren't done by setting out to do huge things. They're done by setting out to do small things over a long period of time. With my trip, every day was 60 to 100 miles of biking. But given enough time, I was able to ride across two continents. It's all about persistence. Now let's go to news and notes. Not, with a K, a problem. Ian Fijian hated when his shoelace snapped, so he invented a new method, the Ian knot. Enthused about his creation, Fijian researched ways to tie and lace a variety of shoes. These knots might help you. The Ian knot. Make a loop with each shoelace. One loop should have the loose end in front, while the other should have the loose end in the back. Cross the two and push each side loose and through the opposite loop. Pull tightly. Dubbed the world's fastest shoelace knot. Ian's secure shoelace knot. Make bunny ears, cross them, then put each bunny ear into the hole below. One bunny ear goes into the hole from the back, and the other goes in from the front. Good for sport shoes or slippery shoelaces. And, of course, it has pictures of how to tie these knots. Hiking lacing. This lacing style distributes pressure evenly, important if you're hiking all day. Starting with the lace straight across the button, thread the outside lace into the first eyelet, across the tongue, then up to two eyelets, across the tongue and up two eyelets again. Continue this pattern. Feed the inside lace immediately into the second eyelet from the bottom, across the tongue, up two eyelets, and so on. When you're finished, tie the knot and on the inside portion of your boot where it won't snag under growth. Fast facts. Hamburgers. Hamburger origins are controversial. Some say the practice of cooking ground beef into a steak shape began in Hamburg, Germany. The recipe then traveled across the Atlantic via immigrants on the Hamburg-American line. In the United States, the Hamburg steak became known as a hamburger. Historians agree that America made the bread and beef sandwich famous. Hamburgers grew in popularity after rave reviews at the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis, Missouri. White Castle, the world's first hamburger chain, opened its first store in 1921 in Wichita, Kansas. One burger cost 5 cents. Legend says Wendy's hamburgers have square patties because founder Dave Thomas refused to cut corners. McDonald's has sold more than 100 billion hamburgers. Stacking those burgers would create 100 piles equal to the height of the world's tallest skyscrapers. Americans eat 150 million tons of hamburgers yearly. On average, each person consumes 100. And heads up, slick move. Last summer, my troop went on a camping and hiking trip. We parked at the bottom of a mountain and hiked all the way up. When we reached the top, we set up camp and made dinner. Unexpectedly, it began to rain. My best friend looked for his rain poncho but couldn't find it. He started panicking. I suggested he use a garbage bag as a rain jacket. It was hilarious. He cut a hole in the black plastic bag and put his head through. Other scouts thought it was funny and began wearing garbage bags over their heads, too. The next day, we hiked back down to the car. My friend's rain poncho was right on the back seat. My friend learned his lesson. Always be prepared and bring an extra poncho or garbage bag. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Boy's Life. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivy, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. So long, till next time.